Hello and welcome to Tax Invoice, the ATO's official podcast. Here at the ATO, we want tax and super to be as easy to understand as possible. So we've invited industry experts to sit down with ATO's senior leaders and ask them the questions. We hope you enjoy this episode of Tax Invoice.
Hi, my name is Anna Lyons and I'm the Principal Lawyer of Justice Connect's Not-for-Profit Law Service, which is a specialist legal service for community organisations. Today we'll be discussing basic tax concepts that not-for-profit organisations starting out should know about and how these organisations can get help when they need it. It can be overwhelming starting up a not-for-profit organisation, but hopefully this podcast will provide you with some good tips to start off on the right foot. I'm also joined today by Albert Berrick, Director of Not-for-Profit Risk and Strategy with the ATO. In relation to Albert's not-for-profit responsibilities, he leads a team that are responsible for identifying and implementing strategies that assist the not-for-profit sector to understand and meet their tax obligations. Welcome, Albert.
Yes, thank you, Anna. It's great to be here.
So, Albert, how about we start by discussing what is a not-for-profit?
Yes, and a not-for-profit organisation is one that operates for its purposes and not for the purposes or the gain for individuals that might be involved in the not-for-profit organisation. A common misconception is that a not-for-profit can't make a profit, but it can, as long as those profits go back into the organisation and that not-for-profit uses those profits to advance its purposes. What the ATO needs to determine before an organisation is a not-for-profit, that it has a clause in its governing documents that prevent it from actually distributing gains or profits to individuals either during the course of its operations or at the time it actually winds up. Interestingly enough, under the law, there's no specific requirements in terms of the words that can be used. So the ATO has its own words on the website as a sample or as a model to provide not-for-profits to include in their governing documents.
Ah, terrific. That's really helpful. And we often direct organisations that come to not-for-profit law to the website where that wording can be found. So it's fantastic to have that there to help guide groups when they're getting started. So maybe now we'll dig a little deeper into the different types of not-for-profit organisations. We often have groups calling us who are looking at getting started and they can be a little bit confused about what's the difference between a not-for-profit and a charity. And one thing that we will often be explaining to groups is that a charity is a certain type of not-for-profit. Apparently, you might know the exact number, but around 600,000 not-for-profits, I think, is a good estimate in Australia. But only about 56,000 or so of those are registered as charities.
Yeah,
is that about right?
That's right, yes.
And so to look at what a charity is, there's a few requirements in the law that are set out in a piece of law known as the Charities Act. And to be a charity, your organisation must be a not-for-profit. It must have charitable purposes and be for the public benefit. And how organisations can go about registering as a charity, the process is to register with the Australian Charities and Not-for-Profits Commission. And that's established as the regulator of charities in Australia. And once they're registered as a charity, then they can be endorsed by the ATO for charity tax concessions. And they can then also apply for different categories of deductible gift recipient status. And as I mentioned, you know, there's 56,000 charities in Australia and they do have a really diverse range of activities. We get inquiries from groups working in areas like health and education. There's also religious charities, organised working for public welfare. And I think, you know, what we see is that there's a really broad spectrum of organisations from very tiny, purely volunteer-based organisations right through to the big household name charities that have high budget.
We also have two other broad categories which we use. So the other two categories are entities that can self-assess under an exempt category. And there is about 9 or 10 different categories that fall under that. And they can self-assess. And as a result of that, they don't need to lodge tax returns and they're income tax exempt. The other category are what we call taxable non-profits. And these are typically, for example, business and professional associations. And these organisations operate as taxable non-profits and have a requirement to lodge a tax return.
And how do organisations work out whether they fall into one of those categories?
On our website, we have the different types of categories. The most common category, I would say, are sporting clubs. So those organisations that are established for the promotion and advancement of sport, they are a sporting category can self-assess as being income tax exempt. And in terms of the taxable non-profits, if you are a non-profit organisation but you can't be a charity for whatever reason, or you can't find an exempt category, you generally fall into the third category, which is a taxable non-profit, like a business association. And we have information on our website that can give guidance to help you work out what type of category you are.
It's interesting you mentioned sporting organisations. We get lots of inquiries from sporting groups at Justice Connect, and I guess one thing we are often explaining is that having the purposes of advancing a particular sport won't in and of itself get you registered as a charity, because sport in that context isn't recognised as being charitable, although of course if it's for another purpose, like working with a disadvantaged community or something where sport is part of another charitable purpose, then a sporting group might be able to register as a charity. But it's really useful that those tools are on the ATO website so that non-charities can assess their status as well.
Yeah, and that's probably a good segue, because it's important to also make sure that you choose the appropriate legal structure when you want to establish your organisation, because depending on what type of legal structure you have, your organisation might have different reporting requirements and tax obligations. So because it is such an important decision up front, we encourage people, if they're not sure, to perhaps get some advice about what structure is the best one for them to use.
Yes, and we agree, because sometimes you can change your structure later down the track, but it can be expensive and time consuming. So getting your structure right from the outset is a really good idea. And do you think it would be helpful just to talk through some of the main structures that not-for-profits can...
Yeah, it'd be very helpful, because it also highlights the different types and perhaps the need to take care in making sure you choose the right structure at the start.
Yeah. So, look, there's a number of different structures out there that a not-for-profit group can use. Some very small not-for-profits will continue on as unincorporated associations. So that's where you've got a group of people coming together for a common purpose, but they're not registered with government as an incorporated association or as a company or as a cooperative, but they can still be recognised as a charity if they meet the ACNC's requirements, and that will involve having a set of rules. So we sometimes see organisations that want to stay small and informal who'll go down that path. The most common structure in Australia is an incorporated association, which is a type of structure that's set up under state or territory law, and that's a really good structure for groups that have local activities like sporting organisations or clubs where they've got a wide range of members, but they're not looking to operate nationally or overseas. And it's a nice, easy structure because each regulator has a model constitution that you can use and adapt, as you mentioned, Albert, if you want to be a not-for-profit. There's also the possibility of registering as a company limited by guarantee with ASIC. And companies limited by guarantee, that's more common where it's a larger charity or where it's operating internationally or across Australia. So that's probably the next most common one that we see after incorporated associations. There's also some other ways that you can structure a not-for-profit, such as a cooperative. So some groups that are very focused on a membership, so an arts cooperative and having members involved, or a childcare cooperative, that can be another really good structure. It's another one that is regulated by state and territory regulators. You can also have a charitable trust. And then finally as well, Indigenous corporations. So an Aboriginal or Torres Strait Islander group might wish to incorporate under what's known as the Corporations Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander Act. And that's a structure, it's a special structure that's only available to Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander owned and operated corporations, there are a lot of options, and sometimes it can be quite overwhelming deciding which one of those is best. And so what we often will encourage groups to do is to think about not just what they're wanting to do in the very immediate future, but some of their longer term goals. So if they see the charity growing, you know, one structure might be better than another, and that's where a bit of legal advice can be really helpful.
Well, yeah, thanks, Anna, for that. That's very interesting and important, and it probably also leads us on to the next important step, that once you've identified what type of not-for-profit organisation you are and what structure you have, there will be a need to do certain types of registrations with the taxation office.
So, Albert, if you've decided to set up your new not-for-profit, you've registered it and you think you're all ready to go, I guess one of the next steps that you need to think about is applying for an ABN.
An organisation can apply for an ABN online through the Australian Business Register at abr.gov.au. A not-for-profit organisation will need an ABN if they have a charitable purpose and need to be endorsed for charity tax concessions or as a deductible gift recipient. A not-for-profit organisation also need an ABN if they need to register for goods and services tax, fringe benefit tax, pay-as-you-go withholding, and fuel tax credits. And depending on your turnover, if your turnover is greater than $150,000 annually, then you'll need to also be registered for GST. If your turnover is less than $150,000 annually, then it's optional to be actually registered. And that's a question for the not-for-profit to decide as to whether it wants to be registered or not.
Albert, what if your new not-for-profit has paid employees? Is there anything you need to think about from a tax perspective there?
Yes, Anna, there is. Even though most or some not-for-profits often have volunteers, they also can engage employees. So if they have an employee or employees, there is a need under the tax law to be registered for pay-as-you-go, and they will need to make pay-as-you-go payments and obligations on their activity statements. Another thing to consider is fringe benefit tax. So it is quite common for a not-for-profit organisation to provide non-cash benefits to its employees. Things like, for example, cars, also perhaps paying for their phone bills or their school fees or for some other types of expenses. And it can be complicated sometimes, and we do have guidance on our website that explains how to calculate the FBT. But we'll also cover afterwards that there are exemptions and concessions that do apply to not-for-profit organisations, particularly charities.
Great. As well as thinking about the different registrations for tax purposes, there's also a few things that a new not-for-profit might want to think about when they first set up where they need to register with other government bodies. But I thought it might be worth just touching on some of these briefly. So for some new not-for-profit organisations, they may also need to look into their eligibility for state-based tax concessions. So for things around payroll tax or land tax or other duties that are administered by a state regulator, that's separate to the ATO concessions that we'll talk about in a moment. And again, in some cases, you might need to either get some legal advice or tax advice around those concessions. Sometimes new not-for-profits will have to think about things like council permits. So often when people are starting these new organisations, they don't quite realise until they get on the ground and up and running that all sorts of aspects of running an organisation are regulated. So if you're running an event and you're using a council premises or you're doing something in a public space, it's important to think about things like whether you do need permits from your local council and whether you do need insurance to run those types of events.
It sounds like a not-for-profit has a lot to consider in terms of state and territory regulation and registrations. Where would you suggest they go to work out what type of things they need to do? Is there like a particular website they could go to?
Yeah, or? That's a great question, because each state and territory regulator has all of the different requirements set out separately. And what we've tried to do at Justice Connect Not-for-Profit Law is to distill those down into fact sheets and checklists, where when a new organisation is set up, we have fact sheets for each jurisdiction in Australia that point to all of the different regulators' websites and give people checklists for what they need to do when they're getting started. And I think it is a really good reminder that it can feel really overwhelming as well, going through all of these different processes. So that's why it's so important that people know that they can access the ATO's resources, the ACNC's resources, and then ours are there as well to try and help explain some of the legal concepts as well. Because it can be a really tricky time for people to navigate through all of these concepts, but there is support out there.
Oh, that's great. Yeah. That's really good. Mm.
So we've covered some of the legal aspects of running a not-for-profit, but can you tell me a bit more about the tax concessions that are available to these organisations?
Yes, and I can. And this is where the ATO has a very special role in ensuring that a not-for-profit can access tax concessions. And the word tax concessions can be confusing because it's not a common word you might use, but from a practical point of view, it means, for example, if you are a charity and you apply for endorsement at the ATO, you get income tax exemption. So that is the tax concession that you get. So income tax exemption is very important because that means they don't have to pay tax, they don't have to lodge a tax return, and they can use that money in their not-for-profit organisation to help them achieve their cause. With a not-for-profit, which we mentioned before, that is a taxable not-for-profit, they will need to consider whether they need to lodge a tax return. So these organisations are taxable and they need to calculate their taxable income.
And Albert, when we're talking about the income for not-for-profits, some people might wonder, well, what sort of income is a not-for-profit getting? But we know that lots of not-for-profits are now running commercial activities, so they're getting fees for services or they might be selling products. But what are some of the other types of payments that a not-for-profit should be considering as its income?
Well, in terms of a charity, if it's income tax exempt, then it's not a particular issue for the charity because it is income tax exempt. Mm. So it might get income from, as you said, like a commercial activity which tries to generate income and profits. But if those profits are then used to advance its charitable purpose, then that will be income tax exempt.
Great.
Same as a sporting club, if they were to do fundraising or have a limited sales or other types of fundraising activities, the income that is generated is income tax exempt if they are an exempt entity.
So we've looked at income tax exemption. What about GST concessions?
Yes, thanks, Anna. There are some GST concessions available not-for-profits if they are in fact registered for GST. So the main tax concession which is available is in respect to fundraising events for charities. So even though they might have GST obligations as a whole, if they undertake certain fundraising activities and they make an election before that event occurs and it is documented, then they don't have to charge or incur GST consequences for that event.
Terrific. So that's a real help, I guess. Things like if you're holding a fundraising dinner or a gala event, they're the types of events that you see being applied?
Yes, and that's exactly what it's there for.
And what about FBT concessions?
Yes, Anna, there's a number of FBT concessions available to not-for-profits. For example, charities which are registered with the Australian Charities Not-for-Profit Commission as a public benevolent institution or a health promotion charity can apply to be endorsed for the FBT exemption. This exemption will provide FBT amounts up to $30,000 per employee. Other charities can also apply to the ATO to be endorsed with the FBT rebate. This rebate will actually discount the amount of FBT which is owed to be payable.
I think what we see is that sometimes there can be some confusion around the fact that only those two charity subtypes that you mentioned, Albert, the public benevolent institution and the health promotion charity, are eligible to the fringe benefits tax exemption. And that's something we are often giving advice about. So it's one of those things where there are 52 or 50 odd different categories of deductible gift recipient in our tax law, but only two have the ability to have that exemption. So that's just something for new organisations to keep in mind. Albert, you mentioned ATO endorsements before. What does that actually mean?
Yeah, Anna, that's a word that we use, and it can be quite confusing, using the word endorsement. So it, from a tax office point of view, it is the process that approves a charity or a deductible gift recipient to be able to access tax concessions. So a charity will first need to be registered with the Australian Charities and Not-for-Profits Commission, and they become a registered charity. At the same time, if they want to access tax concessions, they must be endorsed. So the endorsement is the second step process, where their application form comes across to the tax office that asks certain questions that actually relate to tax law, and the ATO will receive that application and assess it and approve it. And when we approve the endorsement application, they will receive a notification that they are endorsed, and that information will also be updated to the ABN lookup. So the organisation, as well as the public, can go onto the ABN lookup and be able to see if an organisation has been endorsed as a charity by the tax office. Now the other process for endorsement is for deductible gift recipient status. Now that is a confusing word, but what that really means is that if an organisation wants to receive tax deductible gifts from a donor, it must be endorsed by the tax office as a deductible gift recipient. So that too is also a process where we then assess the application, and that information is also displayed on ABN lookup, and it will say on the ABN lookup that this organisation is endorsed as a deductible gift recipient. And that means if you as a donor gives money, then that is tax deductible, which you can claim in your tax return.
So deductible gift recipient endorsement is probably one of the most frequently asked questions that we get at Justice Connect around how organisations can access that endorsement. It's also really important for a lot of groups who are wanting to access philanthropic funding, because there's certain types of philanthropic foundations in Australia that can only make grants to deductible gift recipients. So it is something that a lot of organisations are very focused on achieving. It isn't necessary in order to run a not-for-profit or indeed to be a charity, but it can be, and there's certainly a perception that it is highly beneficial to have DGR endorsement. And so what we will often suggest is that, in going back a few steps when we were talking about your structuring and how you draft your purposes, that it is very important to bear in mind that there are these categories and you do need to meet the requirements of the category or you won't be able to get that endorsement. Some people are very surprised when they learn that there are rules and requirements for getting those endorsements. So it does really pay to do the thinking around your eligibility before you put your constitution or your rules together and before you register, so that you can get yourself off to the best start possible.
As you mentioned before, that there are around 50 deductible gift recipient categories, so there's quite a few, and they've all got different purposes and objects. So it's important that that people go onto our website, where we have a detailed explanation of those different categories and also what are the requirements that need to be met.
Albert, so we've covered a lot of information today about all the different aspects of tax concessions and starting up a not-for-profit. I thought it would be useful to finish by reflecting on what some of our top tips would be, or key takeaways for people who are looking at starting an organisation. One thing I would always say is, you know, coming out of the conversation today, it's a lot of work and there's a lot to consider. So we would always encourage people to think about whether they have the right people on board who are committed to the governance of the organisation and who have the time and resources to ensuring that they can run a not-for-profit organisation effectively. And one part of that can also be getting the advice and seeking out the information and looking at all of the resources that you've mentioned today and thinking through the best structure for their organisation. And a key takeaway is really that there is help out there. What would you think would be some of the most important things to think about at this stage?
And I would say for for an organisation that's getting started, it's important that they understand what they're entitled to access as tax concessions, because it's very important that they can access some tax concessions to help them do their worthy causes. So we would encourage people, if they are starting out, is to go to our website and see what are the requirements and what they are entitled to actually receive if they were to be a not-for-profit organisation. So on our website, we actually have dedicated content that purely focuses on not-for-profits in terms of what their obligations are, what their entitlements are. So we encourage people to go onto our website. We also have a dedicated help and advice team that also can help an organisation before they start to understand their tax obligations, or if they already are started, to get advice about their ongoing obligations. So we do have a dedicated advice line, which I'll give a plug for, 1300 130 248. And if anybody has any questions or concerns about what they need to do or what their obligations are, please contact that phone number, because our staff are more than happy and very keen to help not-for-profits.
And likewise, Justice Connect's not-for-profit law service, we also have resources about not just things like getting started in tax concessions, but also the running of the organisation, so materials on governance that organisations can access free of charge. We have a website, www.nfplaw.org.au, where we've got over 300 freely available resources online people can access. And we also recommend the resources of the Australian Charities and Not-for-Profits Commission when read alongside what the ATO has on offer, gave a really fantastic overview of the law that is around running a charity. So I think a really key message there is just to make use of the information that's available and to access that, because there's so much out there that organisations can use in the early days. And as you mentioned, when they're continuing in their activities.
Yes. Also, so if not-for-profits want to keep up to date with tax and super changes and updates, you can visit ato.gov.au/NFP News.
Albert, thank you so much for your time and for talking us through the ATO's tax concessions and endorsements. It's been fantastic to hear directly about how these processes work, and wonderful that the ATO has all of these resources available.
Yes, and thank you too, Anna, for coming today and sharing your views and experience.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks for listening to this episode. Connect with us on social media and tell us what you think. Download the transcript at ato.gov.au/podcasts.